Joy 94.9.
Orange Ribbon Joycast.
Sponsored by MyMac.
The best Apple computer, iPod and Apple accessory store in Australia.
MyMac.com.au.
Welcome to edition number 400 of Orange Ribbon on Joy 94.9 with me, Alan Smales. Yes, after more than 11 years and with a few off-air breaks since 1998, tonight is the 400th edition of Joy's multicultural program. But we'll be celebrating that next week. Most Melbourne-based listeners to this program will be aware of the gay and lesbian business group called Fruits in Suits, a social and networking group for professionals and white-collar workers. But did you know that this Melbourne-originated group has actually spread to Asian locations as well? Tonight, I'll be speaking to the self-titled chief dreamer of the Hong Kong version of Fruits in Suits, Eric Ferreira. Eric will explain how Fruits in Suits migrated and established in Hong Kong and has become a very successful and large business networking group in that large metropolis. So I've got another interesting chat coming up on Orange Ribbon tonight. Stay with me for the next hour here on Joy 94.9. The guitar sounds of German guitarist Von Blanke, and I'll be playing a little bit of music from that album of his during tonight's program. This is Orange Ribbon. I'm Alan Smales, and it's the multicultural program here on Joy, continuing on from Black and Pink. This is Orange Ribbon. The gay social and business networking group Fruits in Suits was established here in Melbourne around 15 or 16 years ago as part of GLOBE, the Gay and Lesbian Organisation for Business and Enterprise. What a lot of Melbourne people may not realise is that in the ensuing years, Fruits in Suits has expanded into some other countries, one of those being Hong Kong. The Hong Kong version of Fruits in Suits, or FINS as they are beginning to use as the group's name now, was established about 5 or 6 years ago by a then former Melbourne member and a small number of others as well. Being expats, most of the original founding group have moved on, but Eric Herrera is the current leader, or self-titled chief dreamer, of Fruits in Suits in Hong Kong. A few weeks ago when I was up there, I met with Eric to chat about himself, Fruits in Suits in Hong Kong, and about the gay scene and living in Hong Kong as an expat. I began by asking Eric where he was born and about his cultural heritage.
Well, I was born in Chicago, but lived in many cities. Lived in two cities in Texas, and then eventually ended up in New York, where I lived over almost 18 years. And culturally, I'm actually half Mexican and Native American.
With that culture and growing up, was your upbringing any different as a result of that? I mean, did some of that Mexican and or Indian culture get ingrained into you as a child?
Well, actually, the aspects of Mexican or Indian culture really weren't prevalent for me growing up, only because I think we were part of several generations where there was an Americanization of culture. So as a result, language was lost, not only both the Native American tongue, but also the Mexican tongue. And we really were just brought up very American. But on the other hand, actually we had a lot of lesbian and gay siblings actually growing up. So it was quite different in those aspects, in that we had openly gay aunts raising families, gay uncles, gay cousins, and it was just part of normal life, actually.
When did the gay boy appear on your part then? Was that at a very early age, or because of that, or how did it develop?
Actually, it was a very early age, because it seemed, you know, often there's the stigma of not my son, but on the contrary, I think because we had so many gay relatives, it was not something that was shunned on. It was something that, you know, I always have this inkling that mother always knows. Well, of course she did. And I think I was probably more aware of it like 6, 7 years old. But, you know, I think it's such a natural thing growing up that pursuing gay issues, I think, was all throughout high school. So it's fairly, you know, uncomplicated life, really.
And with that sort of family background, with the number of aunts and uncles and whatever,
Do you think that made it more easy for you to be out than, say, somebody who came up in a very closeted family?
As far as being out, I think it did. It probably set a foundation for actually more being morally comfortable or being comfortable with myself as a gay person, because obviously experiencing, you know, daily life in a normal way, at least normal for me, was simply two women raising, you know, three kids, that type of thing, or an uncle, single uncle, you know, with living with grandmother, you know, who had an overly designed apartment, you know, those kind of things. Those kind of all set, I think, a foundation for me being very centered, or at least I thought so, or still think so. And really, once I decided to embrace, you know, gay culture, which was probably in the beginning of high school, I actually I found it to be, you know, natural and easy and with very little complications.
Now, you mentioned to me off air that you were a ballet dancer, amongst other things. How did all of that start? Were you keen on ballet and dance at a young age? How did that develop?
Actually, it developed in high school, but I didn't really pursue it until probably the end of high school, and transferred from an architectural major to literally dropping out of college and going to Houston Ballet to actually study. And so pursued that for quite a bit of time, and then eventually joining a troupe in Austin. So it was actually a love. I think it was a late development, a late, you know, passion. I still go to, obviously, concerts and dance, you know, happenings, so it's not never left me. But essentially that was just, you know, something I had to pursue, and I think eventually got out of the way.
So how long were you dancing, and was that what you went into when you first came out of school or college, or were you really, you did mention architecture before, did you do any architecture?
No, actually. Ironic thing is, my current lover of 22 years is an architect. So never pursued architecture beyond that. But I still have a love and passion for architectural heritage, for architecture itself. I always have. But I really pursued the dancing. But obviously, most dancers are actually poor, so I had to have a, you know, financial career as well. So from the very beginning, actually, quite by accident, I actually entered into the event industry, so event catering, that type of thing, and it's really been with me all my life, actually, since then.
What about involvement in the U.S.? Now, you traveled around quite a bit, I think you mentioned, but were you actively involved in gay community groups at all, and if so, what?
Most of the gay events that I actually participated in would have been like the annual Pride Parade. But as far as community involvement, a lot of the actual gay organizations were my clients. Lambda Legal Defense Fund, the Center, the Gay Center, which is an incredible organization with a beautiful building. I did their opening, their grand opening. So a lot of the actual organizations I happened to be involved through as a client on the business side relationship. And most of my community involvement actually was involved in my own community regarding basically neighborhood upkeep and political, you know, aspects of the actual neighborhood that I lived in. There were a lot of gay people within that organization, so it really had its own kind of vibe, and that's really where I kind of was involved.
Jumping back onto the heritage issue for a moment, have you ever had a desire, or have you actually followed up anything at all to do with either your Indian or Mexican culture? Is it, do you see yourself really as traditional American, and that's just something that was somewhere in the past?
I think there's certainly pride in being a Native American as well as a Mexican. I have not pursued anything on the Native American side, but I must say the last visit back home, I was at a barbecue, family barbecue, and I just had a epiphany. I just sat there at one point and I just looked around. I realized I had 50 Mexican relatives. Everything, you know, almost practically three generations. And I looked around and I really, you know, of course no one is truly Mexican in the sense that I would say probably half of the relatives speak Spanish. Some of them don't. Some really do pursue, you know, the culture as it is in Mexico. But I just looked around and I realized this is our Mexican culture. It is American Mexican culture. And that's what we've embraced all our life for, you know, some of us for generations. And that's what we are today. So if you, to answer your question, that really is, I think, how we're celebrating it.
And in terms of, I'm not sure if they covered before, in terms of siblings, what siblings do you have, if any?
Well, I'm actually one of five boys and a girl. And then, oddly enough, my mother, I have to add this, is she's five girls and one boy. So we have a very large family. I love my brothers and sisters. We get along very well. We stay in touch. So it's a really a wonderful family, actually.
Alan Smales in Hong Kong, and I'm speaking with Eric Herrera from Fruits in Suits.
Joy 94.9.
Orange Ribbon Joycast. Sponsored by MyMac.
The best Apple computer, iPod, and Apple accessory store in Australia.
MyMac.com.au.
Alan Smales in Hong Kong, speaking with Eric Herrera from Fruits and Suits here in Hong Kong. One of the things I meant to ask you before was religion. Did religion play any part in your family or not?
Actually, no, it did not. From an early age, we really had a choice. My mother, I think, was kind of liberal on that side. And actually, probably out of the six of us, probably four of us are not religious at all. We don't attend church. We don't believe in religion. Of course, you know, the other two are religious, but they don't, you know, force their views on us. And we have, you know, civilized conversations about religion. So it's not part of my life at all, actually.
Now, we sort of touched on career objectives and the ballet a little while ago, but you mentioned you've travelled around a bit and lived in various places. Tell us a little bit about some of those moves and how they came about.
Well, I think, I don't know if it's push comes to shove or the adventurous side of my nature where I think, you know, I might have said before, it's easier moving cities than it is, or actually easier moving countries than it is moving across town. Because you make a deliberate choice between what you need and what you don't need. And I found it easier, actually, to move cities than to move across town. And I was, really, it was all about the next adventure. But probably subconsciously, probably from a very early age, I always thought I would be in New York City. So I did a roundabout of the United States before actually getting there. And a funny thing about being gay is, you know, I was so picky in dating that I actually probably, I can only remember one boyfriend, per se. And when I finally got to New York after all those years, within 2 weeks, I actually met my partner. And I almost turned to him and said, can you come back in 3 months? Because I truly wanted to experience New York for what it was. And that was a beautiful, cultural, political, adventurous city. And you know, unexpectedly, there was someone all of a sudden who wanted to share with me. So being adventurous and the pursuit really of being in New York was what it was all about.
You mentioned your partner. He is from what culture?
He's actually English with a little Scottish, born in the States in New York. He's a really wonderful guy.
Now, he had something to do with you ultimately moving to Hong Kong. How did that come about?
Essentially, I was at work or something, and the phone rang. I picked it up, and he said, are you sitting down? And, you know, I couldn't really remember if he had ever said that before, and so I said, yes. And he said, well, how would you like to move to Hong Kong? So it really was, it actually did happen that way. He was pursued by a headhunter, and so we put everything in place, and it just happened very quickly.
And how long ago did this occur? And I think you also mentioned you had 2 years of a long-distance relationship. How did you deal with that?
Yes, actually, that was 7 years ago. So the thing is that the night that actually he left, he was on a plane. I got into bed, and I went, oh, my Lord, what have we done? I think it... I didn't really look at it as, you know, as a long-distance relationship, because I knew that I was... my goal was to get to Hong Kong as fast as possible. We thought it would take maybe 6 months at the most. I had a business with a physical shop, retail shop in New York, and we also had an apartment. So it was really a lot to do. But in fact, it was a little more complicated than that, and it ended up taking almost 2 years. But during that time period, really, when my business was, you know, not as busy, I literally would hop on a plane and come here for 2 weeks. So probably in the course of 2 years, I've tried every single airline, gone every single route. But the adventure, you know, every single time, I just knew that there was no question destiny was going to be here, and here we are, and we're really enjoying it.
Do you see yourself here for a long time, or do you see another move somewhere on the horizon?
I think as any couple, when you actually speak about lifetime goals, what you possibly might be doing in 10 years, we've actually really never thought, but until recently, my partner was asked the same question, and for once he actually did say no, that this possibly might not be, you know, the place where we're going to be forever. But I think it's something that, you know, as we're living it, that kind of is the dictation or the dictating factor on, you know, how long we're going to be here. I also think that part of the reason for coming here was to truly be adventurous and to really travel. And so we're both doing that, both throughout business and also for pleasure.
And how do you like Hong Kong? I mean, do you find it different from... Well, it obviously is different, but did you find it difficult to adjust to life in Hong Kong?
I did not find it difficult in the sense that it was... I truly thought of it as an adventure. So it, as being like a tourist in a foreign land or just traveling somewhere you'd never been, every day was like that. And every day we'd turn a corner and we'd say, oh, my God, I live in China. You know, it's like it truly has that nature. And even now, after being here for 5 years and my partner being here for seven, it truly still has this beautiful quality. And I think the thing is that I love the culture here. You know, Hong Kong has a lot to offer. It's, you know, that in-between place where it's one country, two systems. And I think one of the reasons probably, you know, we'll probably get into, but one of the reasons I'm with Fruits and Suits and part of that is that I saw an opportunity actually that allowed me to be involved in the gay community. Lesbian community here, and that's where it all started, because I immediately, you know, saw that that was going to be a wonderful open gate that I could pursue.
One of the things that I think I would find difficulty in Hong Kong, and I do love the place, spend a lot of time here, but the crowds, humidity and pollution, I guess, and the pollution is not necessarily from Hong Kong itself, but coming down the Pearl River Delta. But have you learned to adjust to all of that?
Certainly have, and it certainly was cleaner, a lot cleaner than it is now. But University of Hong Kong actually put out a study, and 25% of the pollution created here is literally derived from here. So the bus system, so we actually are responsible for a lot of that. And I say we because I do live here, so, you know, we all try to be as green as possible. I see it through others.
And the crowds, I find the crowds here at times, particularly in some of the shopping centres, particularly on a hot day when people getting in the air conditioning, is just unlike flies.
Right, but actually I've grown up only in fairly big cities and usually only living in the downtown areas. And certainly being in New York the last time, the speed, I think the traffic flow, the speed, the energy level, New York and Hong Kong have a lot in common, actually. Pursuit of business, certainly on that level, is quite high here. It's energetic, and I feed on that.
You mentioned fruits in suits, and maybe we'll come back and have a chat about fruits and suits here in Hong Kong. I'm Alan Smale speaking with Eric Herrera.
Joy 94.9. Gay Radio. Good times.
Joy 94.9.
Orange Ribbon Joycast. Sponsored by MyMac.
The best Apple computer, iPod, and Apple accessory store in Australia.
MyMac.com.au.
Alan Smales in Hong Kong, and I'm speaking with Eric Herrera from Fruits and Suits here in Hong Kong. When did you get to first hear about Fruits and Suits?
I actually had been here a couple weeks, and I heard of this new organization that just had started, and I had actually missed the first gathering. And I immediately looked at my partner and I said, we've got to go. And it's my analogy, actually, to how it all occurred is that the first time I actually heard of a salsa gathering, I said to my partner, oh, my gosh, we've got to go because I'll see other Latin people there, because up to that point I had not. So for the first fruit and suits that I actually went to, it was the second month of its actual, since its inception. And I just actually thought that this would be a way to meet a gay business crowd, essentially, and be able to socialize them with them, actually. And it's a network gathering organization, and so I started volunteering from literally that second month of its inception.
So who was the original founder then of Fruits and Suits in Hong Kong?
Gavin Denton, who's from Melbourne, Eric Toh, who's also from Melbourne, and Alvin Chang. There was actually two others, but they essentially started the organization, and I met all of them on the second month, and literally just would go every single month. I've only missed one in the 5 years and 4 months that actually it's been in operation.
And, of course, you mentioned him coming from Melbourne, and I guess that's where it all started. But from what I gather, there is no sort of global Fruits and Suits umbrella organization. It seems like each entity operates in its own right, almost totally independently.
Yes, actually, that is true. I have spoken with Melbourne Fruits and Suits on one occasion, but essentially I think that it's the lending of the idea and the name, and that's, I think, how it's really kind of evolved, Melbourne lending that name to Sydney, and Melbourne lending that name to us here in Hong Kong. I've actually, in turn, spoken to a gentleman from Tokyo, who's actually started an organization there, albeit very small, and also someone who is actually very interested in starting it in Beijing, as well as Macau. So I think that it just has a life of its own, and the basic premise for the whole organization is truly that it is a forum that allows businesses, whether they're gay-friendly, gay-operated or gay-owned, or gay-employed, to extend that, the nature of business to actual a membership, and that membership being Fruits and Suits. We now have almost 1,000 members. We just passed our 5th anniversary, and I've redeveloped the website, so we now have a 9-page website. And one of our themes was, how many times have you been hit on? As a pink T-shirt, those words were written on the front, and the back was our sponsor, 42 Below, who's from New Zealand. And literally the whole theme of that was that the website in 1 month had 70,000 hits. So there is a lot on the website. We're constantly, redeveloping it and changing it. And really, I think it is just a reaction to what the community is all about.
What do you see are the objectives of the group here? I mean, you're obviously covering costs, or presumably covering costs, and making a little bit on the side. You're providing financial support to other groups in Hong Kong?
Yes, actually, we do. What we do is we charge a monthly fee at the door. It's the third Tuesday of every month. Intern minus admin costs, which is the maintenance for the website, and very small admin, other admin costs. We actually then take that money and donate it to mainly the local Chinese community-based organizations. For instance, the last donation was almost $9,000 to the Gay Pride. Rainbow Center, I think, was another. So each, you know, it depends on the organization and what it is they actually are about. But essentially, usually what we try to do is have them also come to the monthly gathering and showcase their organization so that our members are really aware of what kind of groups are out there.
Are there many other organizations such as yourself that can provide funding to those sorts of groups, or is it fairly limited?
It is actually very limited. Right now it's the Fruits and Suits and also the lesbian counterpart to us, which is Lepesh. They actually have a higher attendance in their monthly events, believe it or not, and they also sometimes go to two events a month, one being a dance party and the other one being a lounge where they usually have, you know, some type of speaker or showcase of business. I think that because the gay culture and the community, even though I've only been here for 5 years, it is quite young, not only on the organizational side, but also I think in organizations that even have been here longer than that, the funding, I think, is probably one of those portions of the development that is just slower to take part. And so we really try to donate as much as possible. And as I said before, we only donate to really local charities that are, you know, of Asian roots.
One of the things that fascinates me about business in Hong Kong, and I get back to the humidity thing and suits. To me, humidity and suits don't seem to mix. How do people in business get by and turn up at business meetings looking respectable?
Actually, I could tell you because I do know. En route to anywhere, you avoid the heat. So that means you're jumping into a taxi, into a minibus, into a bus, the subway, MTR, and if I walked more than one block in my suit during the high summer, I also would be exactly as you described, totally wet. So it is something that you have to learn. It's like dodging traffic, or, you know, it's just something that becomes innate. And you know, if you have an important meeting or you want to show up and, you know, there are 150 other guys that you're going to be meeting, you're not going to be walking in the heat.
Where did your self-titled Chief Dreamer title come from?
Actually, that's actually, someone else actually uses that on his business title as well. And I saw that and asked him if I could actually use that, because obviously everyone has president, vice president, CEO. And I just simply thought, you know, what is my goal really with this organization? And I think it has been the same. And when the members started to, the actual founding members started to leave, the one person who really held the purse strings, which is Gavin Denton, he essentially one day just said to me, "This is yours now, and I really wish you pursue the forum that we've actually laid down, and this is really are the goals." So I think he entrusted in the fact that I actually would do that, and for me, I feel a responsibility to do so. No matter where it ends up, if I leave in a year or two, three, 4 years, I will also probably look for that next person who I know I can entrust that this organization will eventually grow into something larger than I probably can make it grow into, that it will help the community. It'll be here for the community. It'll be a source for funding. It'll be a source for gathering. And it'll be a source for where businesses actually can come, introduce themselves, and one of the things that actually was set down in the early rules is that we were to only have the event in a straight location, meaning a straight restaurant or bar. Now, a lot of people ask, well, why is that necessary? Why don't you support your own community? But in fact, I think what the intrinsic thing about that is that what it does is it takes us into an environment that we would not normally be. So we in some ways then expand really the exposure of our culture to a straight society. And that, I think, is really quite important.
Alan Smales in Hong Kong speaking with Eric Herrera, chief dreamer of Fruits and Suits here in Hong Kong.
You don't have to be gay to play at Joy.
Joy 94.9.
Orange Ribbon Joycast. Sponsored by MyMac.
The best Apple computer, iPod and Apple accessory store in Australia.
MyMac.com.au.
Alan Smales in Hong Kong, and I'm speaking with Eric Herrera from Fruits in Suits. Actually, Finns is a name you seem to have adopted more recently. How and why has that come about?
Essentially, that's obviously just the acronym for Fruits in Suits. It really came about because I actually noticed over the last, let's say, 3 years in approaching and trying to procure sponsorship or corporate involvement that because our logo is 9 squares with a colorful background for each square and then there's a banana over each one, it is provocative, you know. And some of the flyers promoting events have had peeled bananas on them. You know, it's all tongue-in-cheek and it's, you know, meant to be that way. But I think to really get serious about business, which is what we're about, or at least trying to be, I personally found that I really needed to rebrand, and it actually is working now, because I do feel organizations are not so threatened about having silly bananas, you know. And there are two schools of thought on that, which I mentioned earlier, and that is, I think that the most important thing really is to expand the awareness of gay culture to corporate Hong Kong. And in so doing, if we have to rebrand our logo by eliminating bananas, that's no big deal.
Now, you're talking about rebranding, and I guess part of that, although not totally, is also the website. You mentioned off air that you're making some changes or got some future plans for the website.
Yes, actually, we'll have video access. We'll have an attachment that goes directly to the use of YouTube. And essentially, we'll start creating videos that will kind of highlight what, if you're gay or lesbian, what you can do in this town. You know, it's really more of a social side. In addition, we're in talks with IBM, who is the organization, their global GLBT organization actually is involved not only in Beijing and Shanghai, I'm sure in Australia, and they're also trying to extend out into like Singapore and Bangkok, but we've met with them and they're quite interested in our organization and perhaps, you know, pushing forth equal rights for employment. So that's kind of down the line, actually.
Now, you mentioned IBM as an example. Now, they, like a number of large international corporations, do have GLBT policies, non-discrimination policies and couples recognition, all that sort of thing. How do these organizations, these large international organizations, implement those policies, if at all, in Hong Kong?
Well, I think what you're talking about are global corporations. So if the global corporation has, let's say, a branch in the States or in Australia, essentially, I would imagine that a local employee or a member of the organization in another city, that's the impetus to actually enforce, or not enforce, but to enact these kind of extension of laws. And that's actually the way it's happening through IBM. That's the way it is happening with other organizations. And that is just trying to keep up with the trends. And obviously, these are not trends, but they're necessary laws that really help all of us.
Now, changing tack a little bit, I, like a number of other people, attended the recent Pride Parade March here in Hong Kong. In terms of the march in general, there was 1,000-odd last year and about 1,800 claimed this year. Do you see that growth continuing? Your, I suppose, five-year experience here in Hong Kong, do you think that more and more are going to come out over the next 2 or 3 or 4 years, or do you think it's going to stabilise at a fairly low number ultimately?
I think it actually will grow because I think, for instance, we marched physically were walking with a straight couple and their children. And they actually were in that parade because, in their case, they're Americans. They had attended Pride parades back in the States. But more specifically, the reason they were there is because their own organization actually supports GLBT, inclusion rights. So I think with more awareness that there would be more attendance in the future. Another point actually I might want to make out, point out, is the nature of how the Pride Parade here actually really plays out. And that is, back in the States where I'm from, New York, we have drag queens, we have, guys that are, in little Speedos, and it's a whole gamut, the dykes on bikes. And but in actuality, if you really look at the Pride Parade here, it is down to the basics, and that is a statement about who we are, gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, and a statement about we are here to stay, a culture. It's not about the hoopla. Of course, that's fun. That's always part of any Pride Parade. And it's kind of interesting to see that it's not part of this parade. And I actually, in the last 2 years that I've actually attended the event, China, Hong Kong specifically, is very embracing of new ideas. And as we walked along the parade route, you could see that people really listen first before making an opinion. And I think that probably is the goal for the committee who throws the organization. Holds the parade. And I think that they're achieving it. So I think the numbers will go up because I think the awareness is from a pure standpoint of what the culture is all about.
I've asked this question of a number of people over the last 2 or 3 years, and I'm not sure that anybody's been able to give me a clear answer about Hong Kong. And so I ask you as an expat who's lived here for 5 years. I find it fascinating that a place like Singapore, where they still have 377A on their statute books and doesn't look like changing anytime soon, even though India has just recently got rid of it from the Indian High Court, and yet they have a very vibrant and reasonably visible gay community in Singapore. In Hong Kong, homosexuality, 377A, was removed from the statute books about 92, I think, from recollection, and yet it seems to me that the Hong Kong gay community is still very much underground to a major extent. Do you have any feelings as to why, or am I asking a very difficult question?
Actually, in some ways, it's not underground. I do understand what you're saying, but point in case, when I first got here, my lover and I first got here 7 years ago, I would come periodically. I didn't live here full-time. One of the things was Club 97. Jamie Higgins actually runs that organization. He manages the restaurant and bar. And on Friday nights, there is now the most celebrated out-on-the-street gay gathering, sprinkling with, some women. But when we first got here, there was this velvet curtain that still hangs there, and it was closed. And we would see expats and Asian locals coming down the, Lung Kwai Fong Lane, and they would look around and then dart in behind the curtains. Well, not only did we, as expats, but a few of our friends who are local, we looked at each other and said, we're not going back in the closet. And so if you look at that 5 to 7 years ago, that was occurring. Now you get 100 to 150 people gathering on the street in Lung Kwai Fung, surrounded by straight culture. And in fact, the bar that's right next to it is actually, we think, the bisexual hangout, which is a little more closeted. So I think that in some ways there are small kind of happenings, something like that. Our organization passing our 5th anniversary, the Tongsi Joint Committee meeting, which just started, and they will actually be an organization. I compare them to kind of the human rights of the United States, slightly different, but in that they'll represent all organizations equally represent, and they will then approach political issues to actually make changes here. So in some ways, your point is taken in that when you come here as a tourist, there's not a lot to really be reflective of gay culture, as is in other cities. Is that part of perhaps the value of real estate, and, you know, organizations can't keep their bars open because the rent is so high? Or is it part of, I think, you know, just simply that there, you know, a lot of people don't go out during the week? It's really a lot of factors, I think, involved in really a conclusion. I think it is making headways. It will be more out in a couple of years, but I think it's really the nature of the game.
And finally, if somebody wants to just check out Finns in Hong Kong, you have a website, so what should they go to if they wanted to check out your website?
Well, it's actually at www.fruitsinsuits, so that's fruitsinsuits.com.hk.
I've been speaking to Eric Herrera, who's the chief dreamer of Fruits in Suits in Hong Kong. Eric, thank you very much for having a chat with me.
Thank you, Alan.
That's Orange Ribbon for another week. Sincere thanks to Eric Herrera, who made time available to me last month in Hong Kong for me to record the interview that you've heard tonight. Coming up next on Joy is Michalina and Saria, who are taking over Global Sounds from where Simon and Paul were running it before. So that's coming up immediately following. Thanks for joining me on Orange Ribbon tonight, and thanks also for a few people who sent in some messages congratulating us on 400 programs. We'll be celebrating more of our 400th anniversary actually next week, so do stay tuned at 8 o'clock, the new time, 8 o'clock next Wednesday. So please join us for that celebration next week. Thanks also to Nick on reception here at Joy for his help and support tonight. I'm Alan Smales. I'll talk to you again next week with the rest of the team, but from me for now, bye-bye.
Joy 94.9.
Orange Ribbon Joycast. Sponsored by MyMac.
The best Apple computer, iPod, and Apple accessory store in Australia.
MyMac.com.au.